call the meeting of the Kennebec Community Services District Budget and Administration meeting for October 7th to order at 5:34.
Director Gilchrist.
Here.
Director Wolfson.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. About the agenda.
We've got one item we'd like to add to the agenda, anywhere really that you want. I'd recommend it'll be fairly quick. So if you want for the first, you want for the last, it's entirely up to you. But it has to do with a policy that we'd like to discuss for consideration, the Cameron Park Lake entry fee and religious use policy.
Okay. Let's go to first.
Okay. I like it. It makes it easy.
I move that we adopt the agenda with that addition.
Second, all in favor?
Aye.
Unanimous. Barbara, there's lots of handouts in the back table back there. Barbara?
Barbara.
What? There's a lot of handouts that you can do in the front of that table.
Any additions to the minutes, Don?
I've got nothing, but then I wasn't here last month.
Oh, that's right, you weren't here. Mm-hmm. I have nothing, so.
Okay.
Motion to approve the minutes as stated.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. I'll now open it up to the public. Members of the public may speak on any item not on the agenda. Know the rules. Okay. Barbara, do you think you have anything that's not on the agenda? Okay, perfect. Then we will move on to department matters with number one half.
Point five. Yes, just before I start on that one, you have so many handouts tonight because staff has just been full. And so we wanted to dedicate the time getting ready for the GM recruitment that we've been working on in addition to the board meeting coming up, and we just haven't had the time. So that's why you have so many handouts tonight, but that will be a rarity. With that being said, we began hearing a lot of chatter about just tell them on social media, just tell them that this is for religious purposes and they can't charge you to get into the lake. And so we drafted this policy and utilizing, you know, state law and looking at some of the federal laws out there. And it just basically states that we charge everybody the same, regardless of religious background. And so that's what this policy essentially states. I'd love for you to take a look at it. We cited the legal authority. We talked about the implementation. There's fee waivers, which we already have in place by policy. The general manager can apply, but obviously that we would do that sparingly. I might make a suggestion, if you take this to the full board, I might make a suggestion that we take this policy and maybe not make it specific to Cameron Park Lake, but to all fees. So now that I read it again, that might be something we want to consider on all of our fees.
Well, then you would have to reword some of this stuff in here.
And we can do that, and we can bring that back. But that would be the goal, is just for all of our fees, because I can see somebody saying, we've never experienced it, but the fact that we're starting to hear the chatter, I think I want to be proactive rather than reactive.
Okay, so I have, like,
sped-read it. Yeah,
And I would agree that this is a religious use policy for all of our facilities.
Got it. Okay.
John, do you have any?
Nope, I agree with that point.
Okay. Members of the public, any comments on this new policy? No? Okay.
So we'll make those changes, and then with your approval, we'll bring it back to the full board with the appropriate changes. Okay.
All right. Moving
Community survey. This is just an overhead conversation just to let you know that staff's been working on what a community survey would look like. I would say it's narrowly focused really to parks, recreation, not to leave fire out, but fire would be, I think we want to focus on parks and recreation because when you look at fire, you're starting to talk about response and those kinds of things. I don't know that that belongs in a community survey with what we're trying to get out of. The purpose and the intent of what we're trying to do with this survey is gather information about our facilities, about our parks, and get some priorities as it relates to all of those. So that's the purpose. And so adding fire in there, one is what questions would we ask? Because I think that's a rabbit hole. The survey is already quite long, that looking at some of the questions that we're potentially looking at. I wouldn't want to put that component on there. Most people, and chiefs certainly chime in, chiefs, most people don't have an interaction with the fire department. When they dial 911, it's a pretty small group when you comparatively look at the number of citizens we have to the number of people that actually dial 911. It's a small sampling. I think that might be a specific, separate survey would be my recommendation.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to survey. Now we're taking your family member to the hospital. By the way, can you fill out the survey?
Exactly.
The time and place is really difficult.
Please don't pass out until you've signed this.
The intent will be a mailer.
So I provided feedback on the survey.
Yes.
And I did ask you to add questions about fire and emergency services. And they were, do you feel your neighborhood is at high risk for wildfire or other emergencies? Are you aware of CSB-supported programs such as FireWise, Defensible Space Inspections, and Community Repair and Workshops? What do you believe is the greatest fire or emergency risk in our community?
And I think those are great questions.
Yeah,
for
that's
sure.
That's more kind of the wildfire side, prevention side, I guess,
Would you be okay if we did a separate survey with those questions, especially now that we have our wildfire mitigation coordinator on, we can tie in with the fire department and maybe get some more information?
I'd like to understand the plan. How are we going to hit 18,000 people with this survey?
I think the plan is to social media, to get out to the stores, QR codes, flyers. We weren't going to engage a company. That's $18,000 to $20,000. We were going to try to do this internally with our team. We would reach out to all of our community partners, newspapers, and those kind of things to get the survey out there with the QR code. Or if they want, they'll have them here. So as people come through using our facilities, we'll have surveys available to them there. That's the plan.
Because I think the board wanted a community survey to get all of our feedback from the community for all of our programs. And I feel that we can't just rely on social media. We're going to get like a tenth of our residents.
No, and we won't rely just on that. Yeah.
So if we're going to spend the money, I don't know how much postcards cost these days, but we're going to put one in everybody's mailbox. We'll know what that cost is.
We'll look at what that is. The El Dorado Foundation was just here recently. We had, Thursday, and that would be a really good day for us to do it as well. They just had two people at a table sitting right out front, and they did a community survey there. We can do things like that. We can also go out in the community at some of the larger events, and then we can push that through. Getting these out to the Chamber and Rotary, I think those would be good as well, the foundations, and let them push those out through their social media and others as well.
I would just like to see us do something so that every resident is aware of it.
And we can look at doing a mailer. I'll get a cost for that.
Here. Not everyone is a part of the chamber.
No, I get it.
Everyone is part of another organization.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm concerned that, if we send out two surveys, they're maybe going to do the first one and go, I already did this or whatever, and we might, number one, it's double the cost, and number two, we may not get as many responses on the second go-round.
I think that if you do it and you tie it in preparation for the fire season, you have a fire safety message. You talk about the new wildfire mitigation coordinator and what their role is and those kind of things. You tie the survey to that. I think you're going to get more people that will be part of that. Plus, that individual and the fire department and their interactions, they'll be able to talk to folks in the community specifically to those questions. I think you'll get a better pull that way.
Kind of like to hear from the public on that,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah,
so I'll stick it out to the public.
I personally
they've done surveys in the past here, and you get such a small number of people. So if you're going to do a survey, to be fair, you're going to have to look at how many people are actually participating mm-hmm. versus the citizens. I had suggested years ago, which never came to pass, mm-hmm. that people should go door to door and talk to people, have that contact, or stand outside the grocery stores and meet the people. Because they've done many surveys here, like yeah. the park, the big, all the money we spent for the parks, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
very, very few people responded to that survey.
Sure.
So, you know, I see where you're going with this, but look, you know, I'm going to say it again. Yeah. You don't have community involvement here. I don't know how you're going to get it.
Yeah, and I don't at all disagree with you. I think that is most surveys you will find their sampling size is relatively small. I think EDH with 50,000, 55,000 residents, their sampling was very small. It was a small percentage of the entire population. But I do think that in our daily interactions, when we say, hey, this is our defined period of time we're going to do this survey, we make sure that we have cards and those kind of things with all of our employees. So any one of our interactions, have you taken the survey? Can you spend a few minutes looking out here in the pool deck where the parents are sitting out there? That's a great opportunity for us to send folks out there when we're at the parks, when we're at different events. I think that's the best time to get that out there. I agree with you. You're not going to get everybody. Even if you sent direct mailers, I like probably a lot of people. Most of that stuff I do like that. But I do think that those that truly care and want to be heard, they're going to fill them out. The thing that we haven't figured out yet, and I think this is true in a lot of surveys, is how do you ensure that the data is coming from people that actually live in the community? Because it's open source, and even the ones that you pay for, it's hard for them to determine. I think they use a factor in there to kind of throw a percentage out. But we ask a question, do you live in the area? And I think that's just what we're going to have to go on, and then that's it.
Question. I might be behind the eight ball here. What is the purpose of the survey? Is it to guide the board in terms of what their priorities should be, you know, for the next? Or
yes.
is it for
gotcha.
Information to be used to fashion a proposal or an approach to a tax increase?
Great question. I think the purpose and the main purpose and intent is to give staff information that we can build a plan or a list of priorities to take to the board and let the board say, hey, these are going to be our priorities. Because what we end up getting in the field is we want a pickleball court and we want this at the lake and we want this over here and the skate park is great. The skate park is horrible. And so all of those things that we hear, we're trying to put into a survey so we can, hey, give us your true input. Because it feels like we're just being pulled in a million different directions. We work for the board, but I want to make sure that we check the box, one, that we've gone out to the public. We get their input. We give that to the board. The board makes a decision based on that. They give us the priorities, and off we go. So if nothing else, we've made our attempt to get out into the public and say, we want your input.
And I don't mind that as like a check the box, you've made your effort,
yeah.
but I think what you're going to get back is pretty much anecdotal responses, similar to what you get out when you're out in the field, is
mm-hmm.
that people who have a particular axe or grind or whatever
Absolutely.
Are the people who respond to these
mm-hmm.
things. And the people who just generically live in their lives and don't really pay up much attention, they're not going to respond and they're not going to really have much to say.
Yeah.
So I think you're kind of end up in the same boat as if you go out and do your walks at the lake. You're probably going to get the same response. That's my guess.
I think you're right.
But at least I understand the point of view of wanting to check the box that you made this effort and therefore you get it back. It's just the question is how much money you want to put to it in order to get what I think is going to be the same response.
Yeah, and so we hear enough to where I do think we're going to get some good information. I do think it's worth our time, energy, and effort to do it. I'm not in favor of spending $20,000, $25,000 to do it, but whatever it takes to do mailers, I think we look at that and then staff time. But I don't know that you're going to get much more by having a company come in and spend all that money, because you can do phone calls and they talk, okay, that's going to be $14.70 per phone call.
Yeah.
And you guys all get it. I look at that, potential spam, I'm not answering.
Right.
And so a lot of people are doing that. So I'm not a big fan of the phone
right.
surveys
right,
right now. But I think getting out there in the public, that might be good.
So I was in Overland Hills, when we were purchasing the golf course, we hired a very expensive company to come in and do it. The one takeaway from the direct mail responses, and the company had a forced ranking, like in order of importance. Mm-hmm. And that's where really the interesting information, because if you ask what's most important to you, right, you get an answer. But when you ask them of these options,
yeah, it makes sense,
rank them, mm-hmm, some really interesting information came out of that. Yeah. We were very much surprised about how people felt about open space versus a golf course. We figured everybody would want the golf course. Not true. A lot of people wanted open space. They wanted to keep it more natural. Right. So I think in how we structure the questions,
right,
and put ranking in there, I think we'll get better information then.
Absolutely.
If people have, they have to have almost a buy-in. I don't think anybody who's casual is going to bother to go through that process. But if they have a buy-in from, you know, they hate this or love this or whatever, they're going to be more inclined to,
yeah,
answer.
Oh, yeah. You, and so you hear that loud and clear.
You're going to do the same. You kind of get some of the same thing, but you'll get a wider set of answers, or at least a wider, I think, bit of information doing it that way, as opposed to, you know,
yeah,
you know, what do you like about the district?
Tell me what you want, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've got a unique opportunity here because we have thousands of people that come through our facility. And so that is where I think it's going to be our biggest bang is, we'll have a staff member or two, we'll set up a table, and everybody that comes through, from our pickleball folks to out at the pool to Rotary and Edcar and all the groups that come through, we want to grab everybody and say, can you spend some time with us and fill the survey out? So that's the thought. I know the board had talked about doing a community survey, so this is to put it out there and see what you think.
I think it would have to be not only here, but at every one of our parks. QR code at every entrance. So for everyone that's going to wherever. I just like to make sure that we get it out to as many people as possible.
I don't disagree. We've got a great Friendsgiving event that's coming up. I'm hoping that's going to be well attended. That would be a good event to do that. Trunk or Treat would be a good idea. So all those types of events, it would be nice to be able to get those out to.
Just whether or not we want one survey or two surveys.
I can't stress to you how important I think it is to keep them separate. We don't want people to rush the fire piece. That's going to be critical. Let them focus on this and then focus on that. I think if you do this, the survey is going to be too long. They're going to get halfway and they're going to be done. Just a thought.
And just sitting here, ChatGTP and what it costs to send out mailers, and it's about 92 cents when you add postage to it, and so you're at about just over 7,000 to get one to every residence in the community.
And that's not building it, we would build
according
ourselves.
To ChatGTP, of course.
Well, the postal rate is 42 cents. That's what it used to be a year ago. But then you
got
to print it, you got to do all that stuff. So you're probably
right
on. I
do printing for a living, so a postcard's 10 cents.
So you're saying you'll cut us a deal?
That's
funny.
And I think, you know, when we talk about the fire department survey, I think we got to have more discussions of really what does that look like.
And right.
What is the end state of mm-hmm. that? Of what are you looking to get at?
What's the purpose?
Our fire service in Cameron Park is very complicated. Most people don't even have a clue that Cameron Park contracts with Cal Fire for fire service. They just know when they hit 911, a fire engine shows up. It can be white or red. They don't really care. So it's really having to start at the end and then work backwards of what do you really want in that survey? Mm-hmm. What are you looking for out of that to then work your way back? I mean, everybody's got their own impression of how fast a fire engine should be at your house and some of those things. And then it just becomes really off-the-wall data with that. It would be interesting to see how many folks have had contact with the fire department. What was their experience? You know, kind of a customer service piece to that, to see if we're meeting the mark on that. But as we get into more of the technical stuff, and I do think, to your point of what is your feeling on wildfire risk and that, especially mm-hmm. with Alex coming on board in that position, that does help him focus the education side on it, of where are we missing the education. So I think that's there. And we may even be able to do a sampling of some sort of that with the Santa Parade.
Yeah.
Because that's where we do have the largest outreach to the community from the fire department in a 3-day period. So if you did something like that, and at the Santa stops, hey, if you could, you know, fill out this QR code, you know, and keep it to 5 or 6 questions, really easy to fill out, it may give you a very cheap way to get a sampling of what some of that is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we do have a what is that meeting that the fire safety councils are having? February? March?
March, I want to say. That's when they all the fire safety councils get together, that one. That would be a great one,
maybe
actually.
Tie it in with them.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That would be good.
So what do you want us to do on this one?
I would say just to really daylight it to the full board. We'll continue refining. We'll take the input we got tonight. We'll make it look pretty, and we'll start getting a plan on how we're going to get it out to folks, and then a time period.
You sent it to us.
Yes.
Did you send it to Parks and Rec Committee too?
Not yet. I will send it to them as well.
Because it's heavily weighted there.
Okay.
So we'll take that one to the board.
All right.
And I did add a couple of questions. Did they make it in there?
We haven't made any changes. I just taken input right now. But we will incorporate those in and give you another draft.
Okay. I'm fine with keeping them separate.
Okay. And then I guess maybe a thought for the community members, if you're open to opening it up again for them, is what questions are they interested in seeing in a survey?
Okay, we'll go back out to public comment.
So we're talking about just Parks and Rec at this point.
Parks and Recreation, though.
Well, my concerns are always budgetary. It's mm-hmm. like what is the priority in terms of your level spending of your tax dollars? And is there a difference between Parks and Rec in your mind? What do you understand that recreation is?
Mm-hmm.
It may not be an obvious thing to everybody. I think I guess it would be priority in terms of if we had to make a choice, you know, what is more a greater priority.
Okay.
Or is it all the same to them?
That's good feedback.
Barbara, anything for you?
No.
Okay.
All right. Moving on to number 2, operations manager.
Yes. So in your packet, you have a draft operations manager job description. And the reason for this position is, we've been here now for 9 months and 8 months, and we are identifying that the role that Mark is in, the Parks and Facility Supervisor, truly isn't that. That is part of it, but it's also much more than that. And so really what we need is kind of that second in command. You need your general manager. If your general manager is busy, sick, gone, vacation, whatever it be, you need that person that's going to be able to step in.
Not allowed.
And run the organization. And quite honestly, we have that right now because Mark's here. But when you finish going through your general manager process, we might not have that if you just have somebody that only has the experience of Parks facilities. Mark he was a previous GM, so he's got that executive level experience. That's my true concern, is Parks and Facilities Supervisor shoehorns you into a spot and might not set your next general manager up for success. I think with all of the, and I'll just use the term threats that we have at our organization, I think you need a higher functioning position to assist with some of those annexation areas that we're missing. We just don't have the expertise with one person to be able to get to it. So we don't want to have areas that we should have annexed into the district that are in our sphere of influence, and we're losing revenue because we weren't able to catch that. Or a new development that comes in and we miss the boat in doing something there. Those are some of those higher level things that I think your general manager is just going to be buried on. You really need that other expertise to help do that. So that's the purpose and intent of doing that. The other piece is we also need, we've got a very green and young staff. They need development. They need development. And you truly need folks that are going to be able to come in, and you need to be able to delegate some of those duties and separate some of those duties so that you can do a better job. One person, one executive is not good enough for this agency with 15 employees now to give them the time they need to be successful.
So are you talking about essentially reclassifying Mark's position for what he's already doing, or are you talking about adding stuff to what he's already doing? Because from what I have heard, You are working crazy nutso hours now, and if we're adding duties, how are you going to manage that?
Yeah, so, and great question. So we are looking at the Parks and Facilities Supervisor, the Parks and Facilities Superintendent, which was an old position, the foreman, in addition to some of the duties that the general manager is trying to do all, putting that in one spot. The other thing is this would be an exempt management position, so there's no overtime, a little boost in pay, but you're a salaried employee. We struggle with that right now because Mark is a non-exempt employee, so he's got to figure out where he's gone during the day today so that he can be back here tonight, or it's overtime. Or there's an event like we had, two events on Saturday. You know, I was at another event with half the team, and Mark's over at the lake with another part of the team. That's all overtime. So those positions, we need to look at making them exempt level positions. So we've gone through HR with this one. This is a concept I want to bring to your attention. We budgeted for potentially taking two positions to go to exempt level. Right now, we're just recommending the one. We did budget about $35 per position, so there's $7,000 in the budget to take this to an exempt level position for this.
And being exempt level, does that take it out of the union?
It does, yes.
Not a problem. Not a problem there. And to your earlier question, you know, a lot of what is in here, because of my background, I'm able to work with the LLADs and understand all of that information. So, yes, I'm doing a fair amount of this already. Well, I'm doing it because in partnership with Mo, we've got a lot to tackle. So this is really kind of putting it to where it should be. I mean, in a union frame of mind, I would be working out of
100%
class or scope or whatever they call it. Mm-hmm. So this is really documenting what this position really needs to be. And again, as Mo has said, we got a lot of younger employees that need coaching and developing. And the general manager, I mean, we both work crazy hours, just leave it at that. But by helping, taking this position where it falls somewhat into this operations manager, that will help kind of clarify the boundaries. Because there have been occasions where I'm like, okay, Mo, do you got this or have I got this? Mm-hmm. And we need to kind of separate that out a little bit. And I think this definition of this position helps do that.
Yeah. I think this also falls in line with the direction that we received from the board, is to look at ways to be more efficient in the organization. And I think this does that. There's some things that we just haven't done because we haven't done it. We have some things that have fallen through the cracks, and you know, there, we've got our pressure vessels. That's something we found out. We just found out about hazmat reporting. We've got two grant components that we're talking about. You're always going to have a lawsuit or something like that. So all of those things are high threat and high risk. And the capacity of one executive to do is just, it's not there. So
I understand the need for it, and I've read through the job description, but what I'm a visual person.
Yeah, yeah.
So what does the org chart look like now, after this?
With
general manager, operations,
yes.
Manager, and then what?
Okay, perfect. So let's start with what we have today. You have the general manager, and then you have two supervisors. You have a parks and facilities supervisor and a recreation supervisor. And above that, kind of off to the side, you have the finance HR officer. And so that's really our only other exempt position other than general manager. And then below that, you've got maintenance worker twos, maintenance worker ones on the facility side, and you have a bunch of part-timers that are maintenance workers as well. On the supervisor side, recreation, you have your recreation supervisor, specialist, coordinator, and then you have your receptionist at front desk. Right now, as it stands, under HR, finance, you also have an accounting two and accounting one that fall there. So that's today. The new recommendation or the new plan would be you'd have the general manager, you would have the operations manager. I will be making recommendation, and I don't think it's a secret out there. I'm evaluating whether or not we should continue with the finance slash HR officer, and the reason for that is those positions don't belong together. I've said that since day one openly. So I am going to recommend you separate those positions. I am going to recommend we continue to use an outside HR as needed. That's proven to be tremendously successful for us and inexpensive. And on the finance side, I think we need to rely on a less expensive financial consultant than the previous company we were using. In addition to the general manager, the operations manager, they're working on that in your accounting team. That is kind of where we need to be looking. I think down the road you'll likely need like a administrative analyst, but that finance HR position, I do think that we need to look at the elimination of that position.
Do you think there is a possibility of putting an org chart together for the board meeting if we decide to send this to the board?
I can do that.
Yeah, I mean that would be easier to understand.
Okay. And the big part too is I want to make it very clear that we're operating within our budget footprint. So I don't want people to think that we're adding a new position. I'm just again looking at these duties and trying to set the next administration up for success. And I think we've done these things all over the place for the last several years, and this is just an attempt to clean it up a little bit.
Just one, kind of, just a small thing that you said, but in a late, a bit large thing.
Mm-hmm.
What concerns me is the comment that we have such a young or inexperienced staff, and that may be a function of the salary we pay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It makes it hard for anybody to you know, bring people along and get the work done and everything else. And I'm just like hoping in the future we could be in a position where we could hire more experienced people.
Oh, I agree. I wish, yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it seems, I know what it's like to be in that position, and it's challenging.
Stressful.
And, you know, particularly for some positions like finance or, you know, things where there are, you know, really important information being done, or, you know, the working with LLADs or whatever, you really want someone with experience. And that just worries me that, I think that's a lot of reason that you guys are working the long hours you are. I'm just guessing.
That's why we have no parking signs upside down right now. I haven't said that to you.
So that's all I'll
show you. Yeah. So you know, you're spot on. That's exactly where we're at. And so my job is to help build the team.
Yeah.
So our recent hire, our wildfire mitigation coordinator. That's because yes, I know we'll get there. But make a point. But hiring that position, we looked at what's out there as opposed to doing what we've always done here. What do we need, and how's it going to get us to where we need to be?
Mm-hmm.
We looked at what other people were paying, and that's where we placed that position.
Yeah.
I think that our positions are good. I think that we've had a reputation out there in the past.
Right.
I think that people do listen to audio, and they do hear all the chatter out there. We've gotten a lot better. The board's been great. The community coming in, I think you guys are responding to some of the changes that this team is making. I think that's why more people start to look at us positively and say, hey, I want to work there. I think you'll see that turn. But as it stands right now, we've made some decisions in the past, and I'm here now, so I'm going to own them all,
right.
Is that we put people in positions prior to them really being ready for that position. It's a perfect example. If you go from your rec coordinator or specialist, And all of a sudden now you're the supervisor, yeah. And you do that in a year,
yeah.
You're not setting that person up for success.
Yeah.
And so the general manager ends up getting frustrated because you're like, why am I having to spend all this time to do this, this, and this? Well, that's because we didn't put the work in on the front side of
yeah.
it. So that's why. It's nobody's fault.
And the other factor that we deal with is, and I don't know exactly the timing, but there was several key positions that left a big chunk in,
yes.
in the middle.
Right.
And yeah. so now we're tasking those that were, you know, like maintenance one or maintenance two, to really, I mean, they're not leads, but to really function as one, because that support layer they had above them is now gone. And so now we have this gap. I mean, the challenge of us is, how do we bring them up? First off, are they capable of being brought up?
Right.
And then the second thing is giving them the time and the tools and the training so that they can be successful. I mean, it was just a function of where this district was a year ago.
I keep remembering, oh, again, you've only been here X months, you know? It's,
yeah.
it's not even a year yet, so.
Yeah, yeah. So is this to replace some of that knowledge? It's just, it's going to take time.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I thought these positions did not get overtime, like his position, Christina's. And now I'm hearing it overtime.
Well, Christina's position, the HR finance officer, does not. That
and
is
why,
an.
And
yeah.
why are they belonging to the union? I didn't think they belonged to the
union. Not in the union.
She's not in
the that position's not in the
he
union.
He belongs to the
correct,
union.
Yes.
And Paul Ryan didn't belong to the union. That's what.
Yeah.
I think it's not you. It's
yeah,
just
yeah.
the things that
well,
I know in the
well,
past.
He was a superintendent, though,
kind
and this
of,
is a supervisor,
of.
I think.
The superintendent was an older position. That one was an exempt
yeah,
position,
well,
and
I,
this is a supervisor
I,
position.
As I said,
yeah.
I never realized that
yeah.
these positions were part of the union. I don't agree that they should be part of the union.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, I mean, they're a head of a department, their department head. Well, I'm just surprised to hear
right.
that.
Well, and that's part of our listening to you all, listening to our board. We're just trying to clean those kind of things up. We met with the union representatives, and they're in complete support. They fully understand it. It meets all the California law thresholds for a supervisor-exempt position, which is why we're bringing it.
All right. Well, you're going to do it, whether I agree or not with it, which I'm not saying I
yeah.
don't disagree. My problem, though, is money. We're going to see at mid-year where we're at. I mean, we got to start slowing down with spending money and doing things, you know, because you don't know what's going to happen in the future.
This was already budgeted. There's
no
additional funding.
But I mean, just overall, you know, we don't know where we're going to be at, you know, and we're just going to have to. Sometimes I think we're moving too fast. That's all I'm going to say. So.
Thank you.
Enough. Okay, so any further comment?
No.
Okay, so we will move this to the board along with a usual
organization
chart.
Org chart, yep.
Okay, moving on to the wildfire mitigation coordinator job description.
You have seen this job description 10,000 times. This was 100% my fault. If you look at minor change,
and you just stuck a disclaimer on there or something, right?
It had on there that this was a seasonal position. It is not a seasonal position. So all that was is just to clean that up, just so the job description is clean and good. That's the only change.
Okay.
It's still an at-will position. It is a limited seasonal. That's it. We do have a new wildfire mitigation coordinator who started. We interviewed. We had 9 applicants. We brought in 4 for interviews. The panel consisted of myself, Mark, Laura, and Chief Martin over there. And Chief, I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to come do that with us. And so the individual we pick, I think far and above, is going to do an outstanding job here. He comes with a depth and breadth of experience, newer in the management role, if you will. But I think that knowledge that he has and what he's already shown, he's going to be a rock star in this community. He's already taken phone calls. He's already addressing complaints. He's only been here for 1 day. So he's already doing those kind of things. We intend on having him at the board meeting, and he'll give you all regular reports on his activities and what he's doing. His name is Alex. We were fortunate enough to take him from El Dorado Hills, where he was a defensible space inspector and ran their program there. He works closely with Cal Fire, with Chief Hoag, and a couple different committees and things like that. So he's a known commodity out there. Chief Richards, I think you know him and you've worked with him in the past. So, yeah. So, yeah, we got a win on that one.
So any public comment on the job description, you may need the words.
We'll move it to the full board. Yeah.
All right. So wildfire coordinator vehicle purchase.
Yes, with the new position, we need a new vehicle. So the new vehicle, we're a couple different thoughts on this. We talked about doing, if we can, within budget, and a electric vehicle. We've got all this solar around here. We've got all the pedestals that are out there and are ready for solar. You look at air quality, they've got several grants up to $5,000 to actually put those in. We can get reimbursed for that, so there'd be no cost there. It just has to be open to the public. So our first recommendation, as long as we're not over budget, would be to go with an electric vehicle. Since we've got all this solar, we may as well take benefit of that. The other thing is they need a vehicle. This needs to be a good vehicle. We don't have enough vehicles now. The ones that we do have, I know Mark's going to be bringing a list of surplus, and they shouldn't be on the road. So we'll be going through that process and eliminating those. This will be a smaller SUV is what we're recommending. I do believe we'll come under the do not exceed of $55,000 past the cost of vehicles these days with taxes, license, and everything. The other thought on how we pay for this, we've talked to our consultant over at SCI. Because this is a new position, he says it is allowable to use fire impact fees. That is our recommendation to the board, is authorization for us to, one, purchase a vehicle, and two, get reimbursement for the vehicle through the fire impact fees.
Okay, so you'd be putting like a charging station here that would be open to the public, basically, so there would be a public benefit.
Sure.
And you're certain it's above board as far as fire impact fees?
We reached out to the consultant to ask that very question. I have that in writing for him. If we do get pushback, we also have, you know, the $50,000 that we got from selling an engine, so that's mm-hmm. available. But there's other options. But this one, you have your consultant that wrote the report that the county approved saying yes. I'd have a hard time believing that it wouldn't be an allowable expense.
Yeah, $45,000 to $55,000, really?
Yeah.
Though, I mean,
yeah.
do they need that type of vehicle?
So remember, this is everything. This is his taxes, mm-hmm. license, and everything.
Okay.
Yeah, that's vehicles aren't as cheap as they used to be.
You said what I drive.
Right. No, it just reminds me of a long ago joke. It was like Doonesbury or something, and this guy drives up in this mm-hmm. thing with big tires, and somebody looks at him and says something like, "Wouldn't a Pinto have been more practical?"
That is not what this is. It is nothing extravagant at all.
Okay.
I think the state bid price was like $42,000 for like a Ford Explorer, but when you take taxes and license, mm-hmm. you put that in there. And then the other piece to think about is you're also paying for fuel for that vehicle. This one, you don't have the fuel cost.
Are we talking about brand new?
Yes.
Okay.
We don't want to buy anybody else's problems.
Too bad. I got a Nissan.
I knew there was an ulterior motive.
Very low
mileage. Oh, jeez.
We'll talk afterwards.
You might have a buyer. Look at that. That's funny.
Yeah, I don't get for tips.
We get a little bidding war here. So that's what we're looking at. Obviously, we'll try to get the vehicle as low as we can, you know, from where we're, and not to exceed that amount. But that's the cost of the vehicle, the outfit, and everything.
That's all I have.
Okay. Public comment? Okay.
They're expensive.
All right,
we'll
move that to the board.
All right. This is a big agenda tonight.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, we're moving on.
Moving on to the bylaws review.
Okay. Verbal report on the bylaws review. Where are my... Right here, my notes. So we talked about our bylaws are really, really old, and without going too deep, I think when you look back in history, we have had some challenges with respect to kind of decorum, meeting decorum. We have had issues with impedance in to operations from some board members, and just some of those issues. That is not addressed anywhere within our bylaws, and I thought that was a good opportunity for us to kind of clean that up and give the board some tools to address some of those. So we look at it, you know, potentially changing it to Cameron Park Community Services bylaws and governance policies. It's just a more modern term, which really reflects what's actually in the document. Other changes, explaining the statutory authority and purpose, and that's just something that's missing. Again, it's an old document. Modernize the tone and the formatting for reliability and policy alignment. Added clear legal authority to reference Government Code 6100, which we're established under. Introduce a clause of fire department. That was a piece that the fire department just really wasn't really addressed in there. So the general manager oversees the fire department operations, administers the CAL FIRE contract. That doesn't mean that the general manager is dictating to the fire department, you need to pull this line and do that. It just simply means that we're one organization and it all falls under the general manager. Let's see, move the principal office location. A thought is talking about a new section defining the district's governance by policy model, just to clarify what it is. So we do, the board sets policy, and then staff's going to implement that policy. So just clarifying that, you know, a little bit more. Adding an annual policy review requirement for consistency and compliance. I think that's a really good idea. I know we struggle with that, and you get policies here and there, but it would be nice to have them on a spreadsheet with the date that, hey, we need to review this by. And so, you know, maybe every other meeting, maybe every meeting, I don't know, budget and admin, you take a couple policies and they get reviewed and you put that in a cycle. So we're not doing one big push. Let's see. Board directors' roles, duties, and conduct. This is probably the biggest gap I feel that we have in the bylaws, and I think they should be addressed. Expanded, clarified board duties and responsibilities. We added the code of conduct, including civility, ethics, conflict of interest compliance, and training requirements. It touched on some of those. This just clarifies them even more, especially on the conduct piece of it. I think that's important. Defined communication protocols through the general manager. Added director orientation and continuing education expectations. It touches on it. But I think it's tremendously important that you have training that's required by law, but there's also other trainings out there. You just don't do the bare minimum. There's other things to make you a better board member that's available out there, and I think we just need to support that. Clarified the annual election of the president and vice president at the December meeting. Formalized the committee structure. And I think the structure is pretty good. I think we just need to clarify that in the document itself. Let's see. Added provisions for committee appointment, Brown Act compliance, and automatic dissolution of ad hoc committees. Remember, ad hoc committees are supposed to have a defined period. They're supposed to tackle a product or a project or a task or an issue, and then they go away. If you have them that are regularly scheduled, then that's a standing committee, and it needs to follow all the rules and everything as a standing committee. So we just need to clarify that a little bit. And I think we're doing good now. I'm not saying we're doing anything wrong. I'm just saying we need to clarify that in the actual document. Delegation of authority to the general manager. It's loose. It's in there, but it's not clear. This just makes it stronger. So define the general manager, the chief executive responsibilities for all district operations, listed specific responsibilities, policy implementations, staff management, budget, and contract oversight. Again, I think it's peppered throughout the document, but this just brings it all in one spot. Insert a new language clarifying the GM's administration of the CAL FIRE contract and coordination with the CAL FIRE unit chief or designee. In this case, I think Chief Blankenheim on the contract, we talk directly, but Chief Martin really is the one that I talk to on a daily basis, really almost on a daily basis. If anything comes up, that's where the GM is working through, because Dusty's more of the operational side of things, where Chief Blankenheim, the unit chief, is the administrative level. working at the entire unit. So I think that's certainly appropriate, and this just codifies that, that relationship or how that works. Added annual evaluation requirement linked, and there's an appendix that I want to put in with what the evaluation process should look like. So we really want to make it more objective and not subjective, because I think that's where we get in trouble, and I think that's where it's not defendable, and this is past history. So that's why we're bringing that in there, and I've got some suggestions for you on what that could look like for the annual. And that comes with a timeline, so you'll have to really start. If you're going to say, hey, we want to deliver an evaluation, say, November, you really need to start around June. Line everything up, get all the comments, shepherd that process, bring all the comments in together, deliver that to the general manager, have them time, give time to give feedback, and then you make it so. But part of that evaluation should also be establishing goals for the general manager. So you almost use that as a SWOT of the previous year, and then also give them goals for the upcoming year. So my opinion, and this is, you know, true in fire service and law enforcement, your chief executive officer, they don't want to do a bad job. They want to do a great job. So you need to give them good feedback, positive and negative, and then also set goals. And their evaluation should be heavily reliant on whether or not they met those goals. So that's what that's all about. Playing a game?
No, my laptop's on silent, so I don't know why I'm getting...
Somebody's IMing her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but why with my laptop funny. On silent, can you hear it? I don't get that.
I mean, look. We all need to use an IT professional.
You're right.
I have an IT person here, and this should not be making noise.
Call somebody. Article 6, meetings and rules of order, expanded cover for the teleconferencing and remote participation. I think we do it, but we need to be a little bit more clear to make sure we're just complying with AB 2449. Added decorum and civility requirements for meetings. Again, I don't think we have these challenges anymore, but it's nice to have them in case we ever do again. That's all that's meant to do. So we'll also remember we adopted Robert's Rosenberg's Rules of Order, and I apologize. I didn't realize that till a couple months in. I'm like, okay. But does anybody really know what that means? Does the board know what that really means? Does the committee really knows what that means?
I mean, I have a copy, and I actually read it.
Yeah. It's, Robert's Rules, Rosenberg's Rules. There's a couple others that are out there. I'm trying to go back in the history to find out, well, why did we switch to Rosenberg's? There's not a huge difference between the two, but we did adopt it, and we want to make sure that if that's what we're staying with, that everything we do needs to be in compliance with Rosenberg's as opposed to Robert's. So transparency, a record, public communications, Consolidated Public Records Act and Brown Act record keeping provisions. I think with our board clerk, Nikki's done an outstanding job in shepherding that whole thing. She gets back to them instantly and then gets that to the appropriate person to actually do the work. And then she's the one that responds back and she keeps us in alignment. But this is really just to get everything all in one spot. Added a section on digital communications and public record retention for emails, texts, and social media. That's a recommendation. I think we need to look at that. I know Cal Fire's got a really, really robust program, and you're not going to get much over, say, like 30 days. And so we need to look at that policy. Whatever's required to keep, we keep. If we're not, I think we need to shed some of that liability because we have had so much turnover. I can't tell you if I'm accurately responding to a PRA because we've had so many people in the position. You got to find all their files and folders and those kind of things. So I think it'll just clean it up a little bit for us. Ethical standards and conflict of interest. Expanded the ethics sections to reference FPPC. That should be there anyways. In addition to conflict of interest rules, added enforcement process for ethical violations consistent with the law. And again, that's just to give the board some tools that we don't currently have today. Expanded amendment process linked to the annual general manager's evaluation requires approval or public approval of any amendments by majority board vote. That one, the board, I think, kind of needs to look at. I think they're backwards. For instance, on a policy, it takes 4/5 vote. For all the rest of your business, it's a simple majority. that seems backwards. For the bylaw change, simple majority.
I would think that would be a forfeit.
Exactly. Forfeit. I think it's backwards. So I think if you're going to do a bylaws change, that needs to be a forfeit. A policy change is regular business. That should be a simple majority vote. It's my recommendation. Let's see. And then the rest is just the general manager framework for the evaluation. Covers the job knowledge. We're looking at a 5-tier rating system: job knowledge, constructive relationships, leadership and management, ethics, integrity, and goal progress. That's all tied into that. Outline step-by-step evaluation process, including closed session review, goal setting for the next period. And Katie, I know this is your world. You'll have a lot of input on that, but I just want to set a framework for us to start. That is what we're proposing. Some of the, I don't have specific language, but I have the overall categories for you. That's what this
is. Okay, so this is not what is in the first draft that came from the lawyer.
Exactly. Okay. The lawyer just looked at the bylaws for any legal components that have changed. So the input you got from him, that's just anything legal. This is actually looking at the document saying, we're going to change things. Let's do this and clean it up now.
Because I do have some input.
Good.
And so but I haven't had a chance to get it to you.
No worries.
I don't think that we would want to go, I don't know. I don't know if we want to approve, take what the lawyer said to the board, and then go back through and add more later.
Yeah, I think what we talked about was the board was just going to send feedback. You have, the legal components. You give feedback. We bring it to the community. They listen. We have a public meeting where we talk about all the different sections and see if they've got input. Then we bring that to back and say, hey, here are the changes. The lawyers looked at it, and then you can vote on it at that time.
Do you want... What are you looking for as far as this? Just
I'm looking for your comments on are you comfortable with some of the things that the changes we're talking about? If you're not comfortable with any of those, we eliminate them. The other piece would be just your feedback when we send out a draft. You have the bylaws now, so if you want to go through the bylaws we currently have, and there's things that are pain points for you, give me those pain points so we can start putting that all in one document. We'll get those to the attorney, and then we'll bring it to a public meeting, and then we'll bring it back to a vote.
Can we put a timeline on kind of what we would like to see for this?
Sure.
Do we want our feedback for next month?
I'd say if we got your feedback from the board by next month, we finalize in December. I would really love this to take effect January. I think it's a fresh start, beginning of the year. It's a perfect opportunity to do that.
Okay.
All
right. Public comment?
This one question.
Budget and admin.
Budget and admin, yeah. Sorry, that's my bad.
Okay.
Barbara,
do you have any comments?
I don't know.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Girl looking.
All right.
So
moving on, convenience gate access.
My favorite topic, the convenience gate. As you recall, we redid it. We have a convenience gate at the lake. It's problematic for us. We've stopped enforcing the program that we had. Some say it was due to COVID. Others say it was due to that's not legal. It absolutely is legal. We've had the attorney look at it. 100% it's legal. But how we implement that, that is a little bit more challenging, if you will. We want to get out of the business in contacting every single resident directly. After one of the committee meetings, we talked about doing, we work directly with the HOAs. So every year, the HOA get a list of all the tenants, and they would say, we were in or we're out, and they pay them, and then that's we would invoice the HOA. So our education will be the HOAs, and this has to do with the individual gates that allow them access into the park. I will tell you, there's a lot of questions, a lot of good feedback at the last meeting, And a lot had to do was, you know, do we have the legal authority to do it? Yes. And so if somebody says, nope, I don't want to pay that fee, then we have the legal right to block access. Well, the gates belong to the homeowners.
Okay, so yeah. You can't padlock them.
You can't padlock, so, you're going to have to put something in front of, and that's what we're going to work with the attorney on.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gates?
The gates belong to the individual property owners. Yeah, the HOAs. And so that would be like me putting a boot on your vehicle in the park. It's your property. We can't do that.
So we have to put like a fence inside
the
fence?
Are you telling me they own the fences?
They own the fence. They own the fences, and I'm good with that because they own the maintenance of the fences. But the interesting thing is we are required to protect our property. So if you have some nefarious activity in the house, they come through the gate, they do something, we could be liable. So that's why we have to have a policy in place and ability to block access should somebody not agree to this. So we talked about, and I'm thinking back in time, Mark, what was the fee? You remember what the fee was before? We talked at our last committee meeting.
Well, that annual pass, and then that's on the air park side. It's $25 for the key plus the annual pass. I don't think there's any key charge for the HOAs.
They were required. Yeah, they were required to buy a pass, which came with a key. So, I think what the committee wanted to do was a flat rate. And that was just to have access to the park through their convenience, get a flat rate, but then also require them to buy an annual pass. Before, the annual pass allowed them to use the gate, but we start thinking about that and saying, if I was a resident across the street, I would have to buy an annual pass, and I don't have a gate. So this is purely for the gate, the convenience of having a gate and easy access from directly from your home into the park. That's what it's for. So that's what the fee would be, and we talked anywhere from $60 to $75, and then you buy an annual pass to, you know, come through the gate and do the other things. That's what we talked about at the meeting. Brian took all of that back, our attorney. He's looked at all of this. There are some questions with respect to, well, what happens if somebody comes through our property into your property and they steal something? So that's all addressed in some of the changes. So when you look at this, it's pretty much a new document, though he's got it written, and it covers all of those. It talks about the our responsibilities. It talks about access in and out, and it talks about how, not specifically how we block somebody, but we would have to come up with what that process looks like. Likely, it'll be something where you have two posts, something in between that post, and it's just installed in front of that gate. We don't have an answer for you on that one just yet. So this is still very much a work in progress. I am a strong believer that's a added benefit that the community members have that others don't have. We should charge for that. I'll stop talking.
No questions.
How many gates?
There are, I believe, 43 gates.
Wow. 43 gates.
Yeah.
And they're going to be locked, and people can have keys, or are they going to be open?
So the individual owners own the fences. So if they want to put their lock on there, and I think a lot of people probably do, that's perfectly fine. They can do that. We won't put locks. We used to put chains around there when people didn't want to pay. We put chains and lock, but they're not our fences. And we don't want to own them. We don't want anything to do with them because if we own them, now we have to maintain them.
But they don't want. What is the general consensus, or do you know?
We haven't really asked. I think that's part of the educational campaign with the HOAs. They're used to this program. The program stopped, I believe, in 22. And a lot of it, like I said, was COVID. I think that was a big part of it. But
have you asked Jill why it stopped?
She mentioned both. It was either COVID, but it was also there's some legality questions. I didn't talk to Jill.
I think they had a problem staffing the kiosk.
And that had nothing to do with it.
I think they had a problem staffing the kiosk. One time they asked me if I wanted to work out there, and I said no. And then the point was they were taking money. And I think there was an issue. Not saying anybody was stealing, but I think because people were taking cash money out there.
Yeah.
Something.
Well, the kiosk has nothing to do with this process, this program.
No, but I'm talking. Yeah, I'm sorry. That's right.
No, you're good.
That's the other day.
Yeah.
But I don't know. They live on the lake. They can afford to pay to get in the lake. A little bit.
That's why it's called the convenience fee.
For them.
What's that?
Make it really
We talked about $60 flat fee, $60 or $75 a year. It's about the same as, I think it's a senior pass is $72. So it's going to be that $72, $75 range. It's a convenience. If I had a gate that I can get directly into the park and not have to drive around or walk around, I'd probably pay that convenience fee.
What is that?
So
I don't know why that's ringing. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
That's my phone.
No.
So you're going to have to build something in order to prevent them from using it if they don't pay their fee.
Yes.
So there's the cost of building 40-somethings.
Well, I think most people want the access, so they'll do that, especially like Summer Spectacular, the other events and those kind of things.
If they don't pay,
they will still have to pay.
It's like the house is sold. I'm just trying to think of some kind of practical logistics.
That's why we go back to HOA. We don't want to talk to the individual owners. We talk to the HOA. They manage all of this.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone doesn't pay the HOA, so does the fee go to us or does it go to the HOA and they go to
us? The fee goes to the HOA. We bill the HOA for all of them.
Oh, okay.
They don't recover the money from there.
Yeah, that's their
problem. We're just trying to get out of the gate business, I guess.
No, I mean, if we don't want to maintain the gate, that makes perfect sense.
That is it on this one. This is still an ongoing process. I was going to bring this back as just an update to the board. Are you good with that?
Did you have it at the board already?
We did take it to the board. It came back to committee, and we were supposed to work through it. And so we met with the committee last meeting. We had some good feedback. This reflects the feedback from the committee. I think we can take it back to the board and see if they have any other comments.
Okay.
Oh, my favorite. I said the last one was my favorite, though, too, didn't I?
Lots of favorites.
So I will tell you this. You got a bunch of documents. So this book and this document here go together. It was just a late ad. I didn't get it in there, but that's what it is.
Not the fire prevention.
But let's go there first. Thank you, Katie, for the tee off. What you have in your hand here is what we have today. This is so convoluted and so complicated. We get questions all the time. What are your fees? In some instances, on the fire side of things, it's very separated. So it's on the fire side of the website, and all the fees are on there. And we met with Chief Callan and Katie the other day, and there's some good opportunities for us to make this more robust and clean them up and look at the fees. I think Chief Richards had some things he wants to put in there as well. When you look at the 2025 Cameron Park Community Center rates, this is a nice document, but I can tell you a lot of times you have to actually go in the application to actually find out what the fees are, and it's convoluted. So that's what I want to tell you on this one. Let's get out of this document, and let's get into this one. This new one we're calling a book of fees, book of scheduled fees, and it's just to clean it up. The intent is to have this in one spot on the website. All of our fees will be here. When you click on the fire department link, I'll have a hyperlink to their page. So you'll see all the fees. There are fees that we don't really charge, and we should be. We should be capturing all of them. So what I mean by that is, you know, a return check for non-sufficient funds. When you get a second check, the credit card convenience fee, that's not codified anywhere. So we want to make sure that if we're charging a fee, and that's the law, if you're charging a fee, it's got to be in your schedule. That's why you're looking at a new format, and they're all the same. So at the top, you'll see administrative fee schedule. We'll put the appropriate date if when it's approved. And then all of this has to go to the board for ratification or for approval, and that needs to be done via resolution, and that's California state law. So what we've done in the past is we've done it on the roll call vote. That doesn't pass the muster. So that's one of the reasons we're cleaning everything up, making the changes. We'll bring it back to you. Staff is responsible for doing the research, making recommendations to the board, but the board is the only authority. They said the governing board is the only authority that can approve fees.
So first thing that struck my eye was here the annual family pass is lower for non-residents than residents.
Yeah, and so let me finish. This is a template, so we're not really looking at numbers tonight.
Okay.
This is a template. So this is what the document, the end document's going to look like.
Okay.
So I know the fire department, they've got, we met the other day, and there's a draft in there. They're looking through those fees. So if you go to that section.
So you haven't updated all the numbers
no.
at the bottom line.
No. We're doing research on what's out there. We're looking at our costs. We've identified some areas where the fee does not cover our cost, and so we're continuing to work through all of those to make sure they're in there. We're also finding things that we don't have anywhere, like photographs and photocopies, media files. They had CD-ROMs, and what was the other one? CD-ROMs and there was something like cassette or something like that. I'm like, you can't even buy one of those.
The old digital
what's that? Floppy disk. I think that's what it was. I wouldn't even know where to go to buy those things. I don't know if you can. the bigger question, I guess, to ask, and I don't want to get shot for it, but it's we have resident and non-resident fees. That's, I guess, pretty rare when you look at a lot of CSDs is one fee. Here's the fee to do it. There's not a significant discount. The other challenge that we have is, remember, our zip code is shared with other communities. And so you're doing a lot of work to figure out, are they really in the district or are they not in the district? And I would say that you're probably spending more money doing that than just having one fee and not having to do that work. So I just want to throw that out as a, do we want to have just one fee? Or do you think there's significant benefit in doing that?
It's not very inclusive. It's very exclusive.
Yeah.
True.
I don't know. Would it piss off our residents to do that, to not charge non-residents more?
You don't even know.
I honestly don't think they know. You're right. And so when you're renting this facility, I don't think people know that. I mean, the rates are you're saving $5.
Yeah, you're saving $1 on lapsing.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the time that we're spending to verify you're in one or the other, you're spending more money than that. Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Exactly. So it's just something to chew on. I thought I'd bring it to you and see if the board wants to look at that. Maybe you do the annual passes because we do get more information for an annual pass. And that would take time. That would be better. But the individual ones, that's where we might not have the ability to do that out in the field. So I think this is convoluted. I think we need to clean it up.
I think that makes sense, actually.
I agree.
Although.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like the fire is just a fee.
Yeah.
The fire is just a fee. Yeah. And that was.
Very inclusive.
Yes. Thank you.
So as far as annual passes specifically, okay, so we've got a senior pass and a veterans pass.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Yep.
And then we talked about a parking pass only.
So. Yes. And we still would like to continue to do that. We've been talking $65 to $75 range. I think we kind of landed on what's the senior and the vet. So $75 is what I think we came up with. I think that's absolutely appropriate. I think that's justifiable. When you look at the number of times, I was doing the quick math the other day. Did somebody do that, Mark? Are you? That's 13.6 visits that you get with a parking pass. I think that we get a different color, so we know when they come here, they can't use their parking pass to use everything else. That we can do that administratively here. We put the Cameron Park late parking fee on there because, again, this is a book of fees. Every fee that we charge by law has got to be in your schedule and approved. So that's why you're seeing all these things that you haven't seen before. The tennis court rental per court. I don't think I've ever seen anybody rent those things, but there's people already always out there. So we want to look at, are we charging? Are we doing this right? The flagpole, none of us even know what that is.
Well, the flagpole is picnic area.
Yeah.
Two or three. Why it was named the flagpole, probably because it's closest to the flagpole. And then the tennis courts, that's if you want to reserve them.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you walk on, you play it, there's a court available, you're out or not. But you can reserve it, but I've been here 7 months, never seen it.
And it's hard to enforce as well.
Well, you don't have staff out there.
There's nobody out there. Right, yeah. The gazebo is interesting. It's $250 for all day. That is exceptionally low. When you look at other parks, they're charging more, a lot more than that. And there's a lot of work. You know, when you have a party out there with 50 people, when we have staff out there constantly emptying the trash cans, picking up everything off the ground. And then the other thing we have is, well, I want to rent the gazebo, but I've got 100 people and I want these tables. We've got no expanded fee for that. We got nothing for that. So it's, well, we can only charge you 250 because that's what we have. So the thought process is looking at different, renaming the areas, have them color coded. If you want this, this, and this, then it's those three fees or something like that. So we have more work to do on that one.
And if you rent the gazebo, you're charging them to park also, are you not?
Great point. So yes, what we've talked about is we've had folks that have, say, 50 people that have a birthday party, and they want everybody to come in for free. And I'm like, well, no, because that we're only charging $250 to rent the gazebo, and now you want everybody to come in for free. That doesn't work. So what we talked about doing was five passes, and those are really the people that are setting it up. Everybody else pays. So we'll give them a pass. They can come through. I think, Mark, you got a piece of paper or something like that. They scan that. They can get in. That's their pass. That's what we talked about was five.
And those
one-time pass.
But you can charge
those specifics will be documented in this.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Everything will be put in there.
Nonprofit.
Yep. Great. Yep. All that needs to be in there.
Could you charge more for the gazebo and include parking? The reason I asked is I had a person that I met, Ms. Hams, that came to me, was a bride, very upset, rented the area for their wedding reception and then got slammed with parking for their guests.
Yeah.
Which something that came after the fact. So that's why it's just. I don't know how many parking spaces are out there.
62.
And maybe you charge more to include the parking, but if you don't, to make sure they know their guests are going to have to pay for parking prior to the event.
Yeah, that's something that we actually just last weekend. We had a big event out there, and we had enough advance warning for them, but when they had booked it, the parking pass wasn't part of that booking, to your point. We should have that in there, so you know that.
No surprises.
You know, and the number should be somewhere between 3 and 5 of the hosts, so they can come in and set up, and then the rest of them. And we actually, because the gate wasn't working, we actually had staff out there, and there were a couple that were less than thrilled, but everybody else just no problem.
We actually were able to sell a couple annual passes or get them to come back to buy annual passes because of that. We had a mechanical issue with the card reader. We think it might have been somebody jamming something in there. So they were left open. So we had, like Mark said, somebody out there with a square device. So we recaptured that. So that was just shy of $400 for that time period. There was a party out there that they got kicked out of another park because it was double booked. They came to our park. We've never seen it before, but they actually set up inside the play structure area. And I'm looking at my, that's a good idea. We need to put that on the list. They can rent that too. So
for a kids party.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. It worked out great. So we're just trying to capture all the fees that are out there and put those in here. Parks fees, same thing. We need to go through all of these. Mark did an analysis of our park fees for some of our teams. I will tell you that, I mean, it is what it is because that's where we're at today. I think, was it Prospector Soccer or Soccer?
Soccer, yeah. So basically they have a monthly max that they're capped at. And then we took that and we divided by the total hours that they had reserved the fields. And it worked out to be $2.33 an hour for a field.
Clearly that doesn't work for us. So we got to do something different. We also have, and we've not been able to find where they've come from, but we have an hourly rate, which would be great if that was applied across the board, but they have a cap. And once they reach that cap, you don't charge them any more for the rest of the season. So that we've got to look at that, and we're going to change that up. But that's what we got down to, the $2.33 an hour. So just to let you know, you're probably going to hear some of that, but we have to change that. $2.33 per hour.
I can't water the grass for that.
No. No. When you look at fire, there's a lot of different fees. I know Chief Richard and Katie, they're going to go through and clean all of these up. The ones that are in yellow, we kind of sat down and I looked in others and I go, wow, we don't have that. So we put those fees in there, like a spray booth, you know, additional heads. We talked about some of the residential plan review, underground tanks. The big section is going to be the wildland-urban interface inspections. There's several inspections in there. So defensible space inspection, second inspection, final inspection, vegetation management complaint. We also have the AB 38 real estate residential defensible space inspections, community fire safe plans. I think we might have a couple. I think that any new development is required to have a wildfire safe plan. And then I believe they are renewed every 5 years. We want to make sure that we have a fee for the renewal, a implementation of a new plan. So any development that comes in, and then the other thing would be requiring annual inspection. So that's another revenue source for, us out there. And the problem with some of these developments is they get a wildfire safe plan approved and they never touch it again. So they say they're going to do all these things, but the moment they sell the houses, there's nobody to make sure they're doing what the plan says. So.
And just kind of a little point of clarification. So with like a lot of those wildfire fees, as long as some of those provisions are captured in the ordinance or the fire code, the health and safety code gives us a mechanism to charge a fee for cost recovery for that position. So it's not really revenue,
right,
per se, it's cost recovery.
Yes.
And that's what gives us the legal authority to implement those.
And you're 100% right. I should change that. That's all it is. It is cost recovery, and it falls under 3240, our cost recovery policy. Weed abatement services plus 20% administrative fees. You know, we've discovered, because we use a third party consultant to do a lot of our inspection work, that we are using the code for outside consulting. That's what we're doing, and so the client isn't really clear on what we did. So we'll actually use the fees, and we'll just know that if we are using an outside consultant, we need to make sure whatever we're paying them is less than what we're bringing in. So we need to look at those. And I think we're really good, with the exception of the senior plans examiner, I think it was, that put us over on the hourly, but I don't think we use that very often. So that's what we're looking at. The weed abatement cost is really, say, if we hire a company to do some forced abatement that we have, and it's $2,000, the intent would be $2,000 plus 20%, which would be our administrative fee for the noticing, the actual abatement, putting a lien on all of those items. That's what that's for. Chief, I missed anything on yours? Okay.
So, I think a big part of that is having some further discussions about some of those fees.
Yeah.
When we get into the defensible space side of the house, the goal is the education, mm-hmm, to the public, and really focusing on the education piece versus, the fee side of that house. And so Cal and I are working on some updated language in there.
Perfect.
That, it's those properties that we've been out multiple times, but the first couple of times going out, the initial inspection, the second inspection, right, that is the education to, mm-hmm, the
Probably the last big one I have on there, and it is a big one, it'll be a big conversation, is two actually. The first responder patient assessment fee, that is in the fee schedule, in the book of fees. However, that is codified in a resolution or ordinance that the board passed. So we need to make sure that if we change that is updated, re-ratified by the board, and then put into this document, and this document is approved. So we need to keep those a little bit separate. The other thought on that is, we know that our first responder fee is excessively low. Our consultant has pointed that out. When I've done the analysis around, we're exceptionally low. Even county fire, theirs is right about $315, and we're sitting at $214. And so we really need to look at that. We've got our consultant right now. He's running a new analysis of that. We do believe that's likely going to go up about $100. That's right in alignment with everywhere else in the area. Amador County is even $70 more than that. Sacramento County is well over $400, $500. We looked at one. I think it was Vacaville, $1,800.
Oh,
blew me away. And I'm like, oh my gosh.
All the people are calling.
Yeah.
Not
yes. Right. Yes. But we're not looking at that. We're looking to, it needs to be reasonable, but it needs to cover our costs. So the way that works, and I know why we got to this number is Cal Fire owns the UAL, and so that's not in the calculation. That's why that number is artificially low. But the reality is, the way it needs to be calculated is you look at our cost of the contract, you look at the number of calls, and you look at all the other services that we provide outside of that, that's got to be tied into it. So all of that plays into it, and that's how they calculate it today. So I think I do think that when you see that, you'll see you know, a pretty significant increase.
Is that charged by the responding unit? So, like, if you come to my house, you're gonna charge me, but if county comes to my house, county will charge me?
Yes. Well,
from where you live.
Depends on where you live, and we have had some complaints on this. In the original ordinance that was adopted here, it clearly states in there, and I think you and I have talked about this a little bit because we got a complaint. They wanted a call, say, in Shingle Springs. Engine 88 does. They get there. They're not transported. We charge a fee. That comes back, and they say, well, I don't even live in your district. I didn't call your fire engine, but that is our ordinance, and we still have that cost. We charge our citizens the way ordinance is written. We're going to charge you as well. I don't know that County Fire is doing the same thing outside. I want to look into that a little bit more.
I don't believe so.
Okay.
It's either you're being charged by whoever shows up at your front door.
Right.
Or if you're in our district, you're charged by us, who, no matter.
The challenge is, you're right, the challenge is to say it's the same house in Shingle Springs, and Engine 88 goes, and Medic 86 from EDH Fire goes, nobody from County Fire goes, is in their district, who is there to bill?
Right.
Who would even know there was a call? That's a problem.
And you can't bill for services you don't provide.
Exactly.
One of the things we tried when we first started this, and some of it's working with the billing company, is we would bill for calls within our district, and County Fire would bill for calls in their district. The two fees are different price range. Mm-hmm. And the same thing if we go down to El Dorado Hills, they don't have a fee. And so,
yes.
But some of it's a challenge with the billing agency to only bill within the district. And that was part of when County Fire did it. You know, the chief and I had talked, we launched it at the same time, but trying to only bill for services in ours, because County Fire comes over into the Cameron Park Fire District, now the residents are getting charged $300-something versus ours is at $214. Mm-hmm. So trying to keep that within within our district, but it's a little difficult with the billing agency. They can only bill off of when our folks generate that patient care report is where they get the information from, and so it gets billed on most of our calls versus you have the actual boundaries that the call fell out of the boundary. And then, you know, when we talk about fire department fees, the other one that you know, Mo and I have talked about, and it's fallen off on multiple general managers, but I think it's one that we really need to look at, is Ponte Palmer.
Don't steal my thunder.
Ponte Palmero. Well, part of your, it's in there, but the other thing is we have, like, Diamond Springs Fire Protection District has a completely separate agreement set up with one of the care facilities that's a nonprofit. So they charge per time throughout the year based off of the OES rate for the fire engine to be there because they don't pay into the taxes into the area being a nonprofit. And so that's how some of them are getting around that. A lot of our calls center around Ponte Palmero, and I think it's a missed opportunity for the district for the amount of times that we're out there for medicals and those things. Yes, the first responder fee gets billed. However, Medicare, Medicaid don't pay for that. That is your vast majority of residents that live there. So there's no recoup on that. The facility makes the phone call. The resident didn't make the phone call. Now they get stuck with a first responder fee. So I think there's some opportunities. Mo and I have had those discussions. It's just a matter of time to where we can go sit down with them and really look at what are those options to
create a very similar agreement with them as Diamond Springs has with one of theirs, because it's really a missed opportunity for the amount. My office being on Palmer Drive, let me tell you, the fellas let me know every time they drive by, and it's about 5 to 6 times a day they're going up the hill that we're not recouping anything for.
Well, they won't let you. I had my mother-in-law was there. Someone falls, we have to call you guys.
100%.
They will not touch them, even though she weighs 85 pounds.
Yep.
You know?
That's
and
an internal policy that they have.
Yes, and but, you know, I mean...
Yeah. Yeah, Mo's got a fix for that.
We do.
It's thunder on that one.
No. So the other piece is we do need to look at doing, we call it a pickup putback or a lift assist, more appropriately dialed. Half hour, $172. You look at the cost of an engine. That's how we got to that number. So that is a real number. The full, cost is a little over $300 for an hour for a full crew. We did a half hour. That's what we think it would take. If it's a pickup and put back and it's based on a policy at a facility where, nope, we can't lift and our folks have to go out there and do it, we need to recoup funds for that. I think that's absolutely appropriate. What happens is every facility knows that we don't have that, and you just call as many times as you want. Not only are they going to patients who really need EMS, but they're going to lift people up, and there's strong people, and they're there, they can do it, and they're getting paid a lot of money to do it.
They wouldn't have to lift people up because of liability. That's
of course, that's always excuse.
That's the excuse, but guess what? It's the same liability and potential impact to our folks hurting their backs as theirs. So why should our folks go out and hurt their backs? Right? So, I mean, that's a weak argument. So I do think we need to put that in there. Last thing I have for you is on the pools. Fire, we have a lot more work to do on the pool, which is a separate page, the aquatics fee schedule. We have a lot of work to do there. It's super interesting right now, especially when you rent the pool. When you rent the pool, there's a 3-hour minimum. Under 200 requires 2 lifeguards. Over 200 requires 3 lifeguards, 3-hour minimum, but it doesn't tell you how much that lifeguard costs. Well, what we're charging the teams and what we're charging for this one is $17 an hour. But we have employees that make over $19 an hour and $20 an hour. So clearly that doesn't work. In my opinion, you should take that fully burdened rate, and that's what it should be. And it's not just the cost of the employee. It's the cost of the rec supervisor or coordinator that's scheduling. It is everything else that's tied to that employee out there. So we need to look at that rate. Last thing I have for you on these is all of our fees, my opinion, we need to have an annual automatic CPI adjustment. I recommend doing the CPIU with the exception of the fire department. I think that the fire department fees, we really need to be looking at the cost of the increase of the contract, whatever that ends up being. I know it's 5%. And so that probably we need to have that separate and specific to those fees. We want to make sure that what we are recovering is going up with the cost of the contract as well. And we just haven't done that. So the fees have been there. That's the only caveat. Everything else, I think you tie it to CPIU. This year we calculated, I think it was 2.9%. So I will stop talking there.
So what is your plan for
My plan is to bring this to you all in the November meeting. Staff is going to be meeting several times to do the research, look at all this, clean everything up, shoot holes in it, prepare a presentable document to you. And the November, we're hoping to bring this to you for a January 1st start.
And CP and Art will be in there?
Their section will be in there as well, yes. Super simple. I'll take park impact and fire impact together if you're good with that. We have to update them. We're getting to the end of our cycle on that. We are looking at different companies to engage with. The good news here is those fees can come from the park impact fees and the fire impact fees. So it's no cost to the district. They're fees that we already have, both in those respective accounts. I think it was 1.2 in fire and 1.7 or 1.8, I'm sorry, in parks. So the funds are there to cover the cost of those engineering studies.
So you're doing RFP or are you going out?
We will probably go out for quotes because I think it falls below the RFP threshold. If we find that it does, then we'll go out for an official RFP. Yeah.
And you're doing that now?
Yeah. Yep.
What do they study?
Public comment?
Well, that's your question. Yeah, what do they study?
The impact.
Yeah, it's called a nexus study. And so what they do is they look at what it costs for us to do business as it relates to new impacts. So new growth in the community, look at all that.
Oh,
so what happens is, I know County Fire had a recent increase. My last study in EDH was a significant increase. But they look at the value of your stations, your apparatus, your equipment, all of those things in totality, and then they come up with the cost per square footage for a new building, commercial or residential.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
I learned so much.
Okay, moving on to staff updates. The check register is included.
Yes, any questions?
I just have one. I noticed that there was a thing with Big O Tires where we wrote a check for zero. Why would we write a check for zero? Or
that's a great question. I will follow up with Laura and I'll get back to you.
Big O.
Big O, zero. Zero.
I mean, I'm assuming they repaired something for free, but why would we write a check is what I was wondering.
I
there was a...
in there, yeah.
But yeah, I don't get why they write a check. There was a credit card that we used, but wrong account.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know what it was, the accounting thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is when the employee had a Cal card, used to pay for it,
mm-hmm.
but then Big O invoiced us back. So I think, I don't know, it was just a little bit of a...
We'll look into it and get back to you.
Mess
and,
okay.
Yep. Because we're buying lots of chemicals from them.
Huh.
We're buying lots of chemicals from them.
Well, I guess.
Yeah, that and that's normal. We're right on track. I will tell you that
now,
we...
Are they the ones that are servicing our pool, too?
No, that's a different company. Lincoln Aquatics is our chemicals. But we've been buying 15-gallon drums. We are in discussions with them to bring in a 400 or 500-gallon tank. That would allow us to go from $13 a gallon down to $5.60 a gallon. So that'll be a significant savings to us.
And I guess I still don't understand the whole solar and electric bill that we're paying the solar and we're still paying a big electric bill. So I don't know.
Yeah, did Brighton ever get back to us as far as...
We've not engaged on the audit yet. Okay. It's on the list.
Are we ever going to break even with having the solar?
We will have to do an analysis of that. We just haven't got to that on the priority list yet.
Probably didn't get in a very good deal, did we? I'm wondering.
In my opinion, any PPA, no. PPAs are not in the best interest, and that's why they're kind of falling away today.
Okay.
We want to pay based on our usage, not based on the amount of power that we generate, because if you overproduce, you're paying for power that you can't use.
But it did get the staff shaved for their car.
The rain still comes through.
Yeah.
Looks nice.
Yeah.
It does look nice.
The annual comprehensive financial report.
Yes, this is a good one. I think this will be a feather in the district's cap once we get done with it. We'll submit it for, you know, an annual transparency and good governance award through GFOA. So this has been assigned to Nikki, our board clerk, and she's off and rolling on it. She's already produced the history and some of the other documents that are required. So we'll probably have not a draft, but just a concept to bring to you at the next board meeting or the November board meeting. But we're really excited about doing our first ACFR.
24-25 audit.
Yes, previously I informed you that we'd be looking for a different audit firm. After speaking to more than one audit firm and getting the cost of the audits today, we also getting what's best practices, talking to our attorney, he's saying anywhere from 5 to 8 years. So we're good to continue with the company we have. There would be a delay, significant delay, if we have to go out to RFP because it's at that threshold. Go out to RFP. Most of them want a 3 or 5 year commitment, so you're looking at 80,000 ish or more. So we think that what we're paying with the company that we have, or the firm that we have, we're comfortable staying with them. We'll look and maybe next year and start earlier. I just don't want to delay our audits. We want to be on time for this audit. Let's keep the same company. We'll re-engage with them.
Wow.
Yeah, it's expensive.
It's good to be an auditor.
Public comment on any of those three things. Any additional items for future meetings?
No, you see the two that are there, they are still there, and we will bring them eventually.
Okay.
They're on the list.
Okay, items to the Board of Directors. So we are...
I've got the community survey to the full board, the operations manager job description with an org chart, and I'll have a salary schedule as well. The wildfire mitigation coordinator update to the job description, the wildfire mitigation coordinator vehicle purchase, the bylaw review, that we'll probably hold for now until we get feedback from the board and we'll follow the process we talked about. The convenience gate was going to go to the full board. The district fee schedule update with the inclusion of the CCNR fees, that will come to the board, but probably in November.
And?
Oh, you're right. I wrote that one in. Good one. Thank you. The policy. Write that down. The other one was the convenience gate access. We'll bring that. The district fee schedule we talked about. Park impact and fire impact. I'll probably do the same thing and just bring that as verbal only. Let them know that we'll be engaging in firms. That is what is going to the full board.
Okay.
Yes. Yep. Okay. Convenience survey. Yeah.
All right, any matters to and from the board committee members and staff?
I think I've got nothing.
One thing that we have is we've got a new company out today. They are painting the fence out there. They're finally getting rid of all the rust. They've got, I'd say, probably 50% done right now. Yeah. They plan probably maybe 60%. They'll finish it up tomorrow. The comments we already got from citizens is off the chart. So
awesome.
We're excited about that. Oh, it's
smooth.
Touch
it,
it's smooth.
Touch it.
We told them, don't touch this. the only other thing we have is that we will be bringing something to you with respect to security of the facility. We have a lot of keys out there, a lot of access out there. We have had people inside the building without us giving them access to the building. We've had some kids that we've seen on the cameras leaving black marks on the floors, and so we need to do something about security and access.
Yeah, actually, I walked out of here one day, and there was some guy sitting in the hallway using the Wi-Fi.
I saw him. Yes.
Yeah, and then when he saw us, he
took off.
Yeah.
How did
you
get
in
here?
Yeah.
So
it's not this department, but this committee helped. Kudos on taking the shaft down out of the skate park, by the way.
Oh, thank you. We're still working on it.
I hope things are going better. I doubt it. And we'll see. Like the idea you made it like a sitting area.
Yeah.
You're going to do.
Okay. Is that it?
That's it.
Okay. And I will adjourn the meeting at
7:15. Adjourn. Check. Woo.
See you next week.
Sorry, that was a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot.